this moment is, I think, really forcing all the planners of the world to just be in the present moment. Like, we literally cannot plan. I cannot plan for jobs.
From the Watson Institute at Brown University, this is Trending Globally. I'm Trending Globally's producer and your guest host, Dan Richards. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking a lot with our community of experts at Watson and Brown about the coronavirus pandemic. But on this episode, Sarah and I talked with some people who are experiencing this crisis in a very different way. They're part of a group that largely relocated their lives as a result of this pandemic and are navigating something that, even by our current standards, is pretty new. I'm talking about college students. We wanted to learn more about life right now as a Brown student and about how young adults in general are experiencing this crisis. So we talked with two current students. This will be the first in an ongoing series of conversations on the topic that we'll be having with students at Brown. To start, we talked with Alina Coleman, who's a junior, and Babette Thomas, who's a senior, and they have had two wildly different experiences of this pandemic. Even if you don't know or have any family members in college, we think you'll find this conversation pretty enlightening. We started by talking with Babette. Babette's a senior. She's from Oakland, California, and was living in an apartment off campus in Providence for her senior year. And for a few reasons, she will never forget the week her college life began to change.
I don't usually remember dates very well, but I remember this very vividly because it was the week of my birthday. So it was like the week of March 9th. We had been alerted that coronavirus was really starting to accelerate in China as well as certain parts of Europe. So basically what happened was that Yale had shut down, Harvard had shut down. It was kind of like this domino effect of like school saying, okay, time to go home, time to get out. So it was just that week, it was a really weird like waiting game. Like we were just like, okay, Brown has to shut down at some point, but when is it going to happen? I remember it so vividly. It was Thursday, March 12th, when we got that email that said, everything is canceled for the rest of the semester, time to go home. So there was just kind of this flurry before they actually let the news out on Thursday, March 12th. And that's, I'm on the committee that plans spring weekend. And so it was just so clear, spring weekend's not happening, underclassmen need to leave campus, no events are happening for the rest of the semester, commencement isn't happening. Yeah.
And what were the first thoughts that went through your brain when you got that email?
Everyone was in shock. Like I was in a dining hall when I got the news with some underclassmen. And I think everyone was definitely in shock, but we kind of knew that it was inevitable, right? Like these schools, other schools throughout the Northeast and other Ivy League schools were shutting down. So it felt inevitable, but it was also just shocking. It was like, wow, this is really happening. And I think I especially felt that shock with underclassmen where they're like, what the heck is going on? I just got here. Like, so...
Did it make you feel the danger more acutely? Like, did it feel scary or just like, whoa, surreal?
I think for me, it felt, whoa, surreal. And I think during this whole process, I think there has been a sense of just like things feeling very surreal and still kind of shock and disbelief that this is all happening, I would say.
Give us the situation of your living conditions.
I live off campus, so I'm staying in my off-campus house indefinitely for the rest of the semester.
Had you already decided to live off campus and stay in Providence? Yeah. What made you not want to go back home?
I think when Brown started alerting students, like, okay, like, it's time to go back home, like, there was a lot of, understandably, there was a lot of panic. But I think I had to take 2 seconds and be like, okay, let me think about this for a second. Like, I know the immediate reaction might be to go back home, to go somewhere that feels like safe and familiar. But I have two parents over the age of 55. So me taking all of my germs that I've gathered here, engaging with all other students, didn't really make the most sense to me to go back to my house and bring that to my family. And also, this is my last semester. So the rest of my friends are staying, the rest of the people who I live with are staying here. So I'm deciding to finish out my senior year here and then just go home when everything is all done.
And so far, you're happy with that decision?
I am happy with that decision. I miss home every day, like totally. I think it's really hard to be in these moments of panic, to be experiencing things that we've never experienced before and to not be with my family. But I also know that I would probably be so sad if I had to say goodbye to my friends like right now and possibly not see them for a while.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are you in a house with other people?
Yes. So I am. So
are you all staying in your rooms?
I am in a house with three other roommates, and we are not like self-quarantining within the house. We are just kind of like social distancing as a unit. I think we've ultimately decided that if one of us gets sick, we're all getting sick because we only have one bathroom, right? So we only have one kitchen. So I think we've kind of ultimately decided that we're a bit in this together.
What about you, Alina? You're a bit farther away from campus than Babette. Can you tell us your situation? Just walk us through the process of hearing about your options and where you were and what happened.
Yeah, so I'm a junior and I decided to spend my spring semester studying abroad, and I'm studying at the Arava Institute for Environmental Studies, which is on a kibbutz in southern Israel, which is kind of like a socialist community in the south. And my program is really cool. It's Israelis, Palestinians, Jordanians, and Americans all studying aspects of the environment together. And it's this really amazing place. And I was so excited to come here and be here and travel all around the region. Obviously, those plans have changed. So on March 13th, I signed up for notifications from the Jerusalem embassy in case things went wrong. And on March 13th, they sent everyone an email saying, prepare to come home right now, come back to the States right now, or stay in Israel indefinitely. And then a lot of the Americans kind of started freaking out because in the email, they said that flights were going to be canceled. And it was kind of, we were kind of making this choice, like, do you want to go home right now or do you want to go home potentially 6 months from now, which is an intense choice to make. I don't have any family in Israel. I mean, I just have my friends who I've made on the program. And I was basically making the choice to rely on them and rely on my program for the next period of time. And then about 5 days later, I got an email from Brown from the study abroad office saying, you have to come home right now. And I kind of expected that email because my friends who were studying abroad in Europe and in South America had all gone home in the week before. But then I replied to that email saying, look, me and my program, it's in the middle of the desert. It's very isolated. We're not around other people or in a city. There are about 300 people who live here and then maybe 60 people in my program. No one is coming and going. If I go home, I'm from New York City. If I go home, that puts me at so much more of a risk than staying here. And after talking to my parents, talking to the people in my program, kind of decided that staying here was the best option. But just hearing my parents' stories about New York right now makes me really scared for them and really upset about everything that's happening. But it also makes me more sure that I made the right choice by staying here just because going home, if I'd gotten sick on the way home or if I'd gotten someone else sick, they're building hospitals in the Javits Center and in Central Park in New York. I mean, there's not enough space for another sick person. And I was really worried about potentially being another burden to that system.
That makes a lot of sense. That was really brave of your family and of you, I think. You're both really far away from your respective homes. How are you like dealing with staying in touch with family? How often do you see each other virtually?
Yeah, I would say kind of during this period of crisis, I've actually come in much closer, like virtual contact or connection with my parents. I would say usually during school, just because I'm a bit busy, I maybe call my folks like once a week or once every couple weeks when I really slip up. But more recently, I've been calling my parents and or FaceTiming them every day, if not every other day. So that has been really a really nice way to kind of reconnect with them, even if it is under not great circumstances.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Alina?
Yeah, so at the beginning of the program, I was probably talking to my parents maybe once a week, just for like a short phone call to check in. I'm an only child, so they're very worried about me at any given moment. But I would say since things have gotten really intense, since the shutdown in New York, I've been talking to them probably every other day or every day, even just for 5-10 minutes, just to check in and say hi.
And they're doing okay?
I mean, not great. It's really hard in New York right now. They're really worried. A lot of like people they know have passed away. It's really intense. And I think it's really hard on my mom, especially because she's very active. She loves going to all these meetings and events and museums, and all the things that she loves so deeply about New York are entirely shut down right now. And I think it's really, really hard for her. And so I've been trying to check in, say hi, just do my best from however many thousands of miles away I am right now.
One thing I've sort of noticed talking with like younger people is there's like almost a shift. Not that this is true for everyone, but often when there's some sort of emergency, you know, I think it can be a little more natural for it to feel like parents are a bit more the worriers for the kids. And the nature of this disease has kind of scrambled that. I wonder if it's sort of changed just your sort of relationship to thinking about your parents and your family at all.
Yeah, I totally relate to that. Like Alina, I'm also an only child. But I feel like I'm calling to yell at my parents every other day to stay inside. My dad is also going grocery shopping. And I'm just like, do you really need to go? Like you went like a few days ago. Like it's like the roles have completely shifted or overturned. Like the family, this virus has really just like completely exploded these family structures where it's like now I'm really like looking after my parents. I feel that very intensely, especially since I can't physically be with them. I feel like I'm really kind of hovering over them.
Alina, what about you? Has it flipped for you too?
I think generally my parents have been very, very careful, and they're very explicit in telling me all the ways that they've been careful. So my dad like sent me a picture of like the mask that he's been using going to the grocery store. But both my parents, they still like they really value going on like a long walk every day just to have some time outside. And that does kind of make me a little bit panicky. Like I called my dad the other day and I could tell he was outside. I could like hear cars going by and I had like my heart kind of sank for a second. Like, what are you doing? Go back inside. But at the same time, I totally get it. I mean, I think if I were in my apartment in New York City right now, I would also really value the limited amount of time that I would get to go out every day. So I get it. And I'm trying to be as empathetic as possible, but I definitely do feel a similar sense of like dread and panic sometimes.
Have you guys developed any coping mechanisms just to manage how radically everything has changed from your academics to your personal life to this paradigm shift where you're now worrying about your parents' mortality?
I think I'm really lucky in that where I'm living, we're right on the desert. Like I can just walk outside and go for a hike or a run. And that's been really amazing because luckily there are not a lot of people in the desert. So it's very open and I can go for as long of a walk as I want and not worry about running into someone else. I've been cooking with my unit mates a lot. We just had Passover on Wednesday. We had a big Seder and everyone. We split into six groups of 10 because we didn't want to have one group of 60. And I think it was really hard for some people in the program who were really expecting to be home with their families for a Seder since Passover is such a like family-oriented holiday. But I think there was also something really amazing that came out of that in that we got to have, at my Seder, we had Americans, Israelis, Palestinians from Gaza, Palestinians from the West Bank, and a Kenyan, all like singing traditional songs and talking about freedom and liberation and all of the concepts of Passover. And we really couldn't have had that in any other world. So I think there is some magic that comes out of it as well.
Wow. I wonder if you could just tell a little bit more about like what the space of your setup is like.
So there are about 300 people who live on this kibbutz, like people, families, Israelis, Americans who moved to Israel. And they live on one side. And then we have our little campus where about 60 students live. And they've really tried their best to keep us on our campus and them in their houses just to minimize like any sort of contact, any chance that the virus, if it were to get here, which it, thank God, hasn't yet, any chance that it would spread from us to them or from them to us. None of us have been to another town or left the front gates in 3 weeks. So we're not really doing social distancing among us. I think maybe there would be some value to it, but I think what we've kind of decided internally is that if no one is leaving and being exposed, then there's kind of really, really is such a small chance that it could get to one of us. And we live in dorms. And so I share a room with one roommate, and then we have a kind of suite set up with six other girls. And most of the other people in the program live in similar setups. And so it's really hard to do real social distancing just because, like, we're all sharing kitchens and food, and it would be really challenging to do that really in practice. But we are doing social distancing from the adults and the families that live here, which I think is an important distinction for them and for us as well.
Wow. So you are interacting with more people than many people around the world right now. I mean, of course, there are plenty of people who still have their jobs and are still working their jobs. But among the people who are in some sort of like isolation, you're interacting with a huge group.
Yeah. So I see 60 people at least every day.
Wow.
Which is definitely more than my parents see.
And your academic courses are continuing, right?
Yeah, they're on Zoom along with everyone else in the world's courses, just because a lot of the professors who teach on this program, they live in the north, they live in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, they're professors up there, and then they come down to teach for 1 or 2 days a week, and that's not possible anymore. And even, we actually, there's one anthropologist who teaches a course, and she lives on the kibbutz. But she's still not teaching us just because of these rules. So it's kind of funny. We're on a Zoom call and she lives approximately a 2-minute walk. Like I know exactly where her house is, but we can't have an in-person meeting anymore.
Babette, are you still taking any courses?
Yes. So my courses are continuing online to varying degrees. So some professors have decided we are going to keep classes normal. And then some professors have completely like upended or changed the way that they teach. I think in my courses, so I am in modern culture, media, and Africana, so I can speak for the humanities, not really for like the sciences or STEM here at Brown. But I've been really like impressed by how flexible professors are being and adapting their teaching styles. But I can't say that's necessarily the case for everyone in every discipline. But for the classes that I'm in, my professors are being so flexible, which is, I think, is really great.
And I wonder how you are thinking about the future and even the near future. What's it like for you as a generation, if you want to be the spokeswomen of your generation right now?
I think this is obviously a super weird time to be entering the career world and like adulthood. In one way, I'm kind of grateful for the kind of like time and the kind of life I'm leading right now as I kind of transition to adulthood, only because I am such a planner. Like if I could plan 3 years out, I would do that. This moment is, I think, really forcing all the planners of the world to just be in the present moment. Like we literally cannot plan. I cannot plan for jobs because I have no idea what jobs are going to look like in 3 months or so. So I think in that sense, and the only reason I have a sense of comfort in that also definitely speaks to like my privilege and like certain stability I have, a stability of housing, a stability of like a couple part-time jobs that I'm able to take on. So in one sense, I'm weirdly grateful. I'm kind of happy to not be thrown into like the like meat grinder that can be like the career world and the hustle and bustle of it all. But the other side of that is like, yeah, things are incredibly uncertain. Like, will there be jobs? I'm a radio producer, so it's like, will there be radio and podcasting jobs like come the end of summer? Like, what will that look like? So I'm both kind of grateful for this time and the possibility for rethinking work that might come out of it, rethinking the ways that we work. But yeah, the uncertainty for someone who does like to plan like myself is a bit hard.
What about you, Alina?
Yeah, I'm also a planner, and so I definitely feel exactly what Babette is saying. At the beginning of this semester, I was very stressed out about being abroad and trying to apply for internships at home. It felt really intense and stressful. Like there was the time difference. I was so preoccupied with everything that was going on in my program. And then I would still at night try to write a resume and a cover letter for another organization. And it was really hard for me. And then in the past couple weeks, I've gotten notifications from pretty much every place that I applied for that the internship programs are canceled for the summer. So it's kind of, it just feels kind of absurd in that way. Like, I was so stressed and worried about this thing, about getting a job for the summer, getting a prestigious job for the summer. And now those prestigious jobs literally don't even exist. It's not even like I got rejected. That just, the position doesn't even exist anymore.
So is there some liberation in that?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think I've really opened myself to the option of trying to stay in Israel for the summer, working for various like peace nonprofits and organizations, maybe working on a farm, just doing something where I am and just trying to stay here rather than going home and trying to get a job as soon as I get off the plane, pretty much.
I was just going to say, kind of along with what Alina is saying, kind of like, it is kind of forcing us just to stay open to like what maybe what can exist outside of these structures and all of these programs. And I think one thing I would say along with that, in all of this chaos, I got into grad school, but I actually deferred it for a year, which I think is something that I've been thinking about a lot. Just thinking about in terms of like the kind of comfort grad school might have provided in terms of the structure come the fall, but also the fact that we have no idea what learning will look like in the fall. Will there be school in the fall? So I think, yeah, it's a weird choice that I'm now wondering, like, was that a huge mistake? Like, am I really going to turn down like structure in all of this chaos? But I think, yeah, kind of along with Alina, I'm just trying to stay open to like the possibilities of what can happen, even in this really weird time.
I was wondering, on the flip side of that, is there anything about, like, I feel like there's been a lot of discussion and thought put into kind of like, what are the shortcomings of doing education over Zoom or digitally or remotely? And I'm wondering if there are any parts that are like working pretty well where you're kind of like, oh, maybe that could just keep being like that indefinitely. Or there's any like pleasant surprises to doing this sort of education this way?
I think for me, my professors have, a lot of them have transitioned to doing a lot more projects for the rest of the semester rather than focusing on the kind of like lecture discussion format, just because having a discussion on Zoom is so hard. And so, for example, I'm taking a class on organic farming, and we would have one lecture and one session in the garden every week. And now they're spending a lot more time and energy of having us be in the garden, working and learning things about permaculture and agriculture with our hands rather than sitting in class.
I want to take Dan's question and pull back and just ask you if there's been for either of you in general, in the most general sense, in any part of your life, if this situation has revealed a silver lining or an upside. Have you gained anything from, just, you know, in addition to having lost a lot?
I think for myself, this isn't necessarily inherently positive, but I actually had the realization through being kind of forced to stay at home now that I had way too much on my plate. I had absolutely way too much on my plate. I think senior year, usually kind of like drop activities. I took a couple activities on my senior year as well as a undergraduate thesis. And so now that I'm inside and that I'm kind of spending most of my time in my home, I'm realizing, wow, I maybe would not have finished this semester in one piece, which is a really wild thing to realize. But there's also something super interesting and kind of refreshing that I'm finding with rest. And just like, I think all, like, so many Brown students are so overloaded, college students in general, like such overachievers that like, this is like the most, obviously the most restful I've been in all of college, which is just a really interesting experience to have my last semester here.
What about you, Alina?
I think one advantage is that before all these travel restrictions were imposed, a lot of people in my program would travel on the weekends or go home, visit families, significant others. And some people, just based on their class schedules, had a 3 or 4 day weekend. So they'd be gone a lot of the time. And I think one silver lining has been that we've all gotten really close just because we're all here all the time together. But I think I've really enjoyed getting to know and getting really close to people who maybe weren't spending so much time on campus just because they have a life at home that they want to stay close to.
Yeah, the solidarity you almost feel with each other. It's been so interesting to talk to you both and so refreshing. I mean, we all are in our little worlds, and I really haven't had a glimpse of what the lived experience of a college student, including a graduating college student, is like. So I'm really, really grateful that you both were so available and so open and willing to share what your experiences have been. It's not only been refreshing because it's been discovery. You've given me a glimpse into your lives, but I'm also feeling weirdly heartened because you, of all people, would be entitled to a major freak out right now. And you both seem so to be sort of dealing with this situation with a lot of equanimity. And I commend you for that. And it also helps make me feel a little better about the world and tomorrow. So thank you for that.
That's so nice.
I think if you'd called us 3 weeks ago, it would have looked very different.
Yeah, totally.
Right. Yeah, thank you both so much for talking with us. This was such a different perspective from what I think many people are used to hearing. So, yeah, stay safe, be well, and maybe we'll talk to you again at some point.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
This episode of Trending Globally was produced by me, Dan Richards, with help from Jackson Cantrell and, yes, from Babette Thomas. Our theme music is by Henry Bloomfield. Additional music by the Blue Dot Sessions. We'll be releasing more episodes focused on the coronavirus pandemic and the world's response to it, as well as episodes focusing on work and research being done at Watson more broadly. You can catch them all by subscribing to us, Trending Globally, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you haven't yet, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps others find the show. For more information about this and Watson's other podcasts, go to watson.brown.edu. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week for another episode of Trending Globally.